Smile, black man, smile. Show the whole world all of your value. So smile, black man, smile, black man, smile, black man, smile. Show the whole world all of your value. Cause you already know, you already know, you already know that you were made of gold. You already know that you were made of gold. So smile, black man, smile, black man, smile, black man, smile. Show the whole world all of your value.
Everybody, welcome. This is Sharon Smith, and this is Iambic Poetry Podcast. And I got here a special guest, award-winning, motivational, a powerful, hip-hop, spoken word, poetic podcaster, and this one of my dudes in Sacramento certified. I'd like to give y'all my man, Coon, the poet. Woo!
A shout, yeah. Welcome.
Salute.
What up,
bro? Hey, how you doing, man? What's going on?
I'm doing all right, bro. I'm doing all right, man. I'm in the words of my late big bro, Aaron Hutchinson, aka the One Legged Warrior. I'm hanging on like a ponytail, bro. Considering everything, man. I know that it's with this, so for myself being a poet and all of that, like, you know, it is all, that is my, that's my position and my part that I play. I know I've learned earlier on in my life, about 15 years old, that that poetry was a vehicle to be able, as an outlet for those, to be a voice for the voiceless. So, as well as the voiceless one inside of myself, right? To and I also learned later on that it's also healing, not just for myself but for others. And right now, there's a lot of pain in a lot of folks out there. Right now, there's a lot of folks that feel like they don't have voices,
right?
And there's a lot of folks that have literally had the breath of their voices stripped from them. And so I know I also, and I learned this, I would say maybe within the last, especially on my travels within the last 6 or 7 years, that I extremely have a responsibility. I have a responsibility to be responsible with what I say, what I put out there, the energy and the vibration that I put out there. So it's all about intentionality. So yeah, I'm hanging on like a ponytail, bro.
So, I'd like to get into your story. What got you into poetry? I know, okay, first of all, let's get to this fourth part. Cause I've already read in some of the interviews you've done and stuff, even heard on the podcast. So you got shot at 15?
Yeah, man. So you've been doing your research, huh? And even some of the stuff that you read off and as you were introducing me, I'm like, oh, my brother actually pays attention. Not many really do and actually go in and dive in to who I am. Some just know me from being at the spots. And so, yeah, in a nutshell, bro, yes, that is a big piece of my story. However, it is not all of me, but it is a gigantic piece. And it played a big part in me jump starting like who I am as an artist, who I am as a man, and who I am as a purpose walker. So yeah, long story short, yeah, for sure. 15 years old, 3 bullets, walking home from school.
Damn.
I'm feeling scared like a baby laying in the nursery. This is the day of my anniversary. Of the first time that I had to be rushed to emergency. This is the day of my anniversary. Thinking about the bullets hitting my body is hurting me. This is the day of my anniversary. So if I act a little paranoid, y'all just work with me. This is the day of my anniversary, March 1st.
And I'm an open book too as well, bro.
I get it, man. But I just wanted to know, because I read about it and some of us are like the hunt down and stuff, and I was like, dude, it must have hit you hard when that came out of nowhere. It's like, well, I'm from SAC and my people try to kill me. It's like,
Yeah. It's you know what, man, and then to be honest, like in growing up in South SAC, bro, like and growing up and at the time period that I grew up, I'm not going to say it was the norm because I don't believe in normalizing chaos and trauma.
Right.
But it was something that was very common at that time period for us. And even now, like even at a more magnified level on steroids, especially in the height of what's going on right now with the youngsters that's from my side of the tracks and the youngsters that's from like neighborhoods like Oak Park, El Paso Heights, that's from the hood. There is a current war going on. And so that kind of thing is common, especially right with what's going on a grander, right in the middle of what's going on a grander level in the media,
right?
And not even just in the media, in the world, period. We are still being oppressed. We are still being slaughtered and also thrown away by those that are supposed to be protecting and serving us. And also just those that feel like they're at the top of the food chain. And so it's a lot of, it could cause a lot of confusion. And a lot of it is, you know, I believe firmly that a people perish without a lack of knowledge. Right. People perish without knowledge. And a lot of it is just not understanding the setup and the design.
You know
what I mean?
That is a serious design. But let's talk about your design. So you started rhyming by finding your father's notebooks when he came back into your life at 7, and you start just charting off his stuff. That basically gave you some of your voice, or you started your voice. Okay, tell me about that.
So my pops left home when I was 3, and then came back when I was 7. When he came back, I learned later that he went on his own journey. When he came back, he had a bunch of notebooks of writing. And that was his way. That was his way of being able to connect with me. And I've talked about it on certain platforms, but me and my pops don't have the greatest relationship just based on lifestyle choices that we both chose. You know, I chose to move in this direction. He chose to move in a different one. But the poetry, the lyrics, the music, that is a language, a vibration in a world where we always have been able to communicate and always, even with the estranged relationship, still connect on. And so I picked his notebook up, and a lot of my earliest stuff was his stuff, and that I would kind of mix and master. Like I would mix up. And when I say early, I'm talking about 7 years old. and then as I grew, I started kind of venturing out, writing my own stuff. And then as life started to hit me a little bit harder, that's when it got a little bit more honest for me and more real for me. And that's why the content of a lot of what I talk about, for some, they may say, you know, it's heavy, but it was the reality of a 14-year-old, 15-year-old coming up in South Sac. You know what I mean? Right. From warrior to kingship. And that warriorhood was not easy. That fight was not easy, just to be able to get to a place to where I can be able to breathe, I can be able to stand strong and hold my crown.
So, right? So has, I know poetry's always, you know, it's always circling around something with Black folks and stuff. Well, Black people always had their way around poetry in different directions, from the Harlem Renaissance to even hip hop to even now being transformed into somewhat spoken word. But you seem like you started off with hip hop and then went into spoken word. Is that true or no?
So if you, to be all the way honest with you, bro, if you really know if you, and I don't know how much, I know everybody has their own thoughts on, you know, that argument of is poetry rap, is hip hop has always been poetry. It has always been poetry. It was our sound
right.
of poetry. You know what I mean? Like it was, and we come from a place of, and even the conception of hip hop and the revolution of hip hop is, when you come from a place of lack or less resources, you're gonna make do with what you got,
right?
Which is where the beatbox came from,
right?
You know what I mean? Like, and I never had an instrument growing up. And I never was placed in contemporary classes of art. Had I been, I probably, certain skills probably would have most definitely been sharper at an earlier age. And so what I had around me was the culture.
Okay.
Right? The culture. And actually, I started writing, period, I started writing stories.
Okay. Yes. But talk about that. You being a storyteller.
Yeah. Short stories. That's something that's always, so my family, man, we tell stories anyway, but I was a, believe it or not, I was a superhero kid, man.
superhero.
You said, who's my favorite superhero? Yeah,
superhero.
Because I'm a real, bro, to be honest with you, I have many for many reasons, but I'll name a few of mine. Okay. And then there's gonna be some there's gonna be some debate in the second one I name, but I'm gonna start. I rock with wholeheartedly, of course, now Black Panther.
Right.
I'll tell you why. And it's not for the same reason that a lot of folks might think. And I'm talking about T'Challa.
Right.
And the reason why is because of the integrity that it takes to be able to maintain this kingship. It's not about the toughest. It's about the integrity. Right. For me, I rock with Captain America. See, I like cats that have simplicity, but take it to the next level.
Okay.
Not just the ones that have a lot of power, a lot of power, a lot of power. And so ultimately, this is a part where I say it's debate, to be honest with you. And I know a lot of argue that Batman is not a superhero. But what makes him super is his ability to be able to be able to sit at the table with a lot of, in my opinion, of course, right? A lot of very superhuman individuals, right? A lot of folks with a lot of power, and they respect him.
Yeah.
You know, his money helped buy a lot of his gadgets, but it's really his Batman's superpower is his mind.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so, for sure. And then, of course, I can name off a couple of X-Men. Wolverine, that's my guy. and then Incredible Hulk, because I felt like that was my story. Right?
Okay. That was
for sure, that part of having a control self, right? Learning how to control self, to be able to control the power within self.
Okay.
Yeah. And then Power Rangers. Ninja Turtles, if you want to go deep. We can talk about the whole Channel 12 in the 90s.
So I was going to say, with that being your power, was your favorite Power Ranger always been Zach, the Black Ranger, or has it been Jason?
Nah, and it's not even just the, now mind you, and this is the thing too, growing up as a young Black kid in the 90s, we didn't have much representation. So when I saw somebody, I'm like, yeah, Black Ranger. But I like Zach because Zach had character. Zach and Dan. I like Zach because, like, the key, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. I like the fact, like, on the opening credits, he did that little dance move with, you know what I mean, a little shimmy, and then, hey-ya! You know what I mean? But to keep it G, my out of all of them, my favorite Power Ranger was Tommy.
Really?
Secure, absolutely.
The Green Ranger?
Oh, damn. Nah. You know what? I understood Tommy as a whole.
Okay.
And I think, once again, like, I love the duality. I love when, that's the part I love about the superhero world. And even, like, you know, and I know we can't hear the talk culture, but if people, those that really understand, there's a lot of duality that goes into what I do as a poet and as an artist. And I talk a lot. There's a few pictures I posted, me kind of typecast as a superhero, and this being my superpower and my super ability. When we were introduced to Tommy in the beginning, as y'all can say, as y'all can see, I really, really was about that life. We were introduced to Tommy as the Green Ranger. He was actually brought on as he was a pawn to be able to take down the Rangers.
Right, villain. Yeah,
he was a villain. And then as he started coming to, he became he actually ended up becoming their leader.
Right
as he started finding as he started as he snapped out of that trance.
Right.
And then it was his leadership ability, his heart, because he also showed the romantic part of it.
Right.
Right. So the soft part of it. Although could nobody fuck with him? Like,
you can cuss on this.
For sure. Could nobody fuck with him in the hand? Jason for sure was their top dog.
Right.
But even Jason had to salute him. Yeah. And so that became, you know what I mean? And so Tommy became the leader. Tommy also had his own, you knew Tommy was coming, or you knew Tommy was there because you were here, Tommy. Yeah. You knew Tommy was around or on his way near by the way that Kimberly moved. There was just a whole energy, Tommy's energy, you know what I mean? And so growing up, I would study a lot of leaders. Right, a lot of superhero leaders or a lot of hero leaders to figure out what kind of man I wanted to be.
Okay.
You feel me? Like, last night I was just breaking down to my lady and I do like use, you know, movies, TV shows, cartoons as a way to explain character.
Right.
You know what I mean? Because and so you always can find a leader because it's not that they're the toughest, it's not that they're the greatest, but they have to have the ability to make the tough decisions.
That's true.
Has to be an integrity molecule inside them, an integrity strand inside them to where even when the matters of the heart are involved, they still have to make the executive decision.
Yeah, I see what your point with that. With the Ninja Turtles, Leonardo had to make the choice.
Let's go, man. Leonardo, because he, at the end of the day, he had to make the tough decisions. Raphael wanted the position based on ego and arrogance. And ego and arrogance, at the end of the day, one of my, what's the most popular line? And then we can shift subject if you want. But But what is the most popular line in the movie Black Panther that a lot of people love?
Oh, wow. Trying to think of a line. Hit me up. Let me know. What is it?
I know what was popular. A lot of folks love, especially, you know what I mean? A lot of our people, black community, they love the line by Killmonger at the end of the movie. Bury me in up with my ancestors.
Yeah. Killmonger's. Killmonger's line, that was the deep one. But also the colonizer was a deep one too. Hello, colonizer.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
You've never seen so many
people look like, oh,
you've never seen so many black people walk around going, colonizer, what's up, colonizer?
Yeah. The part in that movie, and I brought it up for a reason, because something that stuck with me often, and I know it's because of the positioning that I've been given, like in the city, in the scene, and I don't, you know what I mean. And this is not a self-appointed position, but I it took me a long time to step in my whatever you consider leadership, right? It took me a long time to step in that. And there's a line in the movie that the general says. She was talking to Killmonger. She said, "A king cannot rule in anger," and that is so that when we're talking about leadership, kingship, even like when we take a stand as poets and artists, because there's a lot of dope poets that can fuel and move. Even when I started, when I really started spitting, I had a lot of pain, I had a lot of anger. So a lot of people on the scene today or scene now don't know this part of me. But this was even before I broke into the poetry scene, just doing music. Rocking with a lot of like, you know, hip hop cats, rap cats. It was a lot of, you know, pain, even anger, you know what I mean? Even like vengeance. And so after a while, if you stay in that energy, what will happen is you're going to, well, one thing that I learned, I think I was about 19 when I learned it. Whatever you talk about, you're going to actually manifest. The more you talk about it, you're going to manifest it. And so that is also the reason why I write about some of the things that I write about, and talk about some of the things that I talk about, is because I'm still in the journey of manifesting the world that I want, and manifesting the world that I know that a lot of people want, right? That peace.
Right.
Manifesting that wealth, that generational wealth, right? Nobody wants to really be, you know, we talk about, you know, sure, some of you and I, we have a lot of mutual friends, especially in the scene. A lot of artists are also activists. But to be all the way, to be quite honest, how many of us deep inside want to be yelling, screaming, and protesting somebody's death because of, you know what I mean, because of a lack of peace, because of a lack of, like, love?
That's true.
You know what I mean? And so because of that, I know I got a responsibility because I've accepted that my words have power, you know, however you choose to see it, anointing, my tongue is anointed. When I speak or say something, people listen, people move, it shifts things. That means I also got a responsibility to move as a leader with integrity and be very, very, very mindful of what I put out there.
True.
And not to be all extra deep, but sometimes shit gets deep.
Well, speaking of which, of heroes and stuff, I found out that you had a tag team called the Illegal Tag Team.
Bro, you've been doing your research. You've been really researching. I'm saying, I am digging you, bro.
But
that makes me happy, bro. I'm like, what is this guy? So tell me this, man. Like, where'd you get your info?
I went out. I dug in for you, man. I was looking around going, I was like, I know only one side of Coon. I don't know the other stuff. So I started just looking into it and just like, started to find little pieces, and even heard the podcast. But I'm gonna get to all that.
We on the tag team business, huh? Right.
So tell me about Illegal with your brother Treble.
Yeah. Look at him. name dropping and everything. So man, look, and honestly, I'll say it like this: I was 14 when. And I was in high. I was a freshman in high school when they started formulating their first rap group.
Okay.
And that group was called the Pharaohs. My brother and most of the members in that rap group were all real tight. And so I was known for, or I was not really, I ain't gonna say known, but I was always writing music and poetry at that time. I didn't want to be a part of the rap scene like that. I didn't want to be a part of the rap group because at that time I was fresh. That was right after 8 Mile, and we was all, you know, it was that kind of energy.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Battle rap era, and we was all, and everybody was getting in, you know, constantly getting in the funk with other cats. This is like at school. Long story short, man, I actually ended up joining the group about like 14, like the last little bit of years, 14. Trouble was a part of that group. Shortly after that, I ended up getting shot.
Oh.
After I got shot, like, we had like our first rehearsal meeting, and even like recorded a song that I wrote called Me and You. Yeah. At that time, we would actually call it, it was known as a cupcake song, right?
Okay.
I had this little, I had somebody I had a crush on back at that point. So I wrote the song. Trouble actually, He set up the studio session with me at the Vault Records, which was a real popular studio in the South area at that time period, back in like 2004, 2005, off of Power Hand and Gerber. Shout out to JP, shout out to Black Sun, shout out to the Vault Records. And so shortly after we recorded that first song, we started like starting to come together as a group. I was shot. And then after, when I was in the hospital, trouble reached out to me. And mind you, at that time, we weren't extremely tight. We had knew each other for a couple of years, but we weren't tight, tight, tight. But he reached out to me and he was just like, you know, checking on me. But then he let me know, like, yo, look, when you get out, you're going straight to work. We're going to be in the studio and I got your back. Anybody say anything? And mind you, we all knew the same characters, but we all grew up in the same, you know, neighborhood, same area. He was like, look, I got you. Don't trip about nothing. There ain't going to be no problems at all. So it's going to be it's going to really be a problem, long story short. And so that was the first initiation of, like, our brotherhood. Got out the hospital, went to the studio. Another member of the group, TC, Trent Cruel, and he was actually Caucasian. Okay. Right? So he actually was the one gathering all the beats, you know, connecting with people, and also making some beats too. And so we started actually recording our very first album entitled Life in a Casket. And and then we formed together. We came up with our name, Illegal. And the whole idea of Illegal is sometimes you got to do a little wrong to make things right. You know what I mean? Like, the whole idea was kind of going against the grain. The E, at that time period, we made a decision that the E meant eccentric. Eccentric in our methods and how we moved, eccentric in even like our dynamic as a group. But very much willing to go against the grain. I'm just giving you the early stuff and I'm gonna move on real quick. So we also had a few different like female singers in the group at the time that would come in and out. Shout out to Miss Sasha, who was a part of it. I think I may have posted it, but we had on our very first album, Life in a Casket, it was a lady on there. And that was actually my ex-girlfriend, my girlfriend at the time. And so we had like this whole, and there's a lot of stuff that I'm still going to put out, like a little mini movie, kind of talking about the earlier years of like our music group. So then as we started getting older, that was from like 04 to 07. And so to 07 to 08, that's when me and Trouble actually started branching off and we started performing spoken word.
Okay.
And that's as we started really stepping into our manhood. And life started getting a little bit more real. You know, 18, 19, 20, trying to like find our way. And at the same time, like, the South area was getting a little bit more dangerous. You've heard the term South Sac, Iraq, correct?
Most definitely. I lived out there.
So, when you say out there, where you stay at?
43rd.
So, 43rd, huh? So, yeah. So, you know, because we were, you know, we're in the Valley High area. And actually, it was one of my little homies, right? One of my best friends, little brother, who actually created the term, right? The same, like, hey, this South Sac, Iraq, this Iraq, at that time. And this was like 08, 09. And this is when Sacramento was getting, when that the Valley High area was known, had the highest homicide rate, Sacramento. And so, and at the same time, that is when, you know, a lot of folks that we grew up with, a lot of folks that we used to rap with, do music with, hang out with, started losing their lives. And so it was like a lot of trauma. The more stuff that was happening, the more we would actually write. There was a time period, and I'll share this on record, since we're talking about the duality. I remember when Trouble actually came to me. And I'm transparent. I'm learning how to be more transparent in this season. I remember when he came to me, he was like, y'all ran into somebody that done the best, right? Right. We sat down and we talked about it. And then he also, in that same breath, he was just like, so we can do that. Or I also ran into somebody putting on an open mic. And then he put it right there on the table in my garage. And it was like a little flyer, Third Eye Collective, over there at the Coffee Garden. At the time, this was 2008.
Okay.
I don't know. So my boy, so shout out to my boy Forward.
I know Forward. Yeah, I know Forward.
So that's who he ran into at CRC that actually invited him out. And that was our first like debut.
Oh, okay.
Right? As Illegal Tag Team. Because before that, we were on a light rail and we used to spit verses back and forth, especially if we was trying to get another. Right? I'm giving you the young, right? This is young us coming out of South Side trying to get away from the chaos, right?
Mm.
And then more things were happening at that time period. Trouble's brother ended up in a car accident, a real bad car accident, which kind of shifted our mentality on like our younger siblings,
right.
Like not our mentality, but just our perspective on our younger siblings, our younger cousins, and then a lot of the youngsters around us. And so as we started building this Illegal Tag Team thing in the form of spoken word and poetry, we also started mentoring.
Uh-huh.
Right. And so it was, one of our other earlier debuts as well was at an event called, it was at the San Pinel Center in Meadowview, Changing the View. And really, we just thought it was a talent show. One of our homegirls who was going to Job Corps with one of the other sisters who was in charge of the talent show portion, connected us, gave us the flyer and was like, you guys should audition. You guys are dope. And so when we went up there, we did that. We actually ended up rocking the house, but it was about 500 youngsters there, 500 young people, and a lot of them was all from South area, especially Meadowview, Valley High. So a lot of them we already knew. But when we got on the stage, and they was acting crazy, turning up, and when we got on the stage, first thing we did was check them immediately about respecting our craft and respecting us on this mic. And I guess it was something that nobody else was able to do before. They all got quiet.
Mm.
The whole entire room got silent. You hear a pin drop. And so we were able to do, now mind you, everybody was used to seeing rappers, but we were able to spit our truth a cappella. After we did our first piece, our first poem, they went crazy.
Okay.
Oh my God! Thank dope. We got pulled off the stage by a lady who was a part of an organization that just a youth based organization, and she was just kind of blown away about how we controlled the young people. She invited us to do it some more, to come and speak to some of her young people over at the Sierra Health Foundation. And then we ended up, so from that event, we ended up going to Camp Grizzly Creek Ranch. And all of these, it was kind of just riding away. Can you guys come just do what you guys did? Can you guys come? We have young people. We need you to speak to our young people. Can you just come? And so that is, and at that time, we had no sense of how to value what it was that we did.
Right.
So, but before we knew it, and we were blessed that we were actually in the hands of people who understood what we were doing, even when we didn't. Because so after we went to camp, we was actually blessed with a few thousand dollars. We took that $1,000 and invested in our business. Right. Invested in our brand.
Right. So wait a minute. So I never thought about this. So was that the start of what you've been doing so far? I mean, I've known you doing, you know, shows at classes, libraries, mm-hmm. and stuff. Is that the beginning of the origin of that starting
Absolutely.
Off?
Absolutely.
And then
also even you being a recovery specialist over at Stars, I mean, it's like you've always been in, I mean, been a motivational speaker as much as you've been in the rap and the poetry scene.
It was all simultaneous because to be honest, and the reality is this. All my partners who had the gift, and one of my, and I have to give him some kind of, I got to pay tribute to him. One of my boys who is no longer with us, Eric Young, AKA Baby. A lot of my most talented and gifted partners were actually losing their lives at that same time. So we realized like it wasn't enough to just, and even to this day, it's not enough to just do the talent.
Right.
Because especially if the youngsters around us are seeking out guidance or needing are in need of guidance, and they're looking and they have and they're going to look to whatever leadership that they can look to, whether that's the big homies on the block. And so, since we had connection and we had access and we had voice, we also had a responsibility to look back and pull back. Like I said at that time, so after we're still in the earlier age. Stages of this after Trouble's brother got into that real bad car accident. Mind you, you know, they was young, having fun, stole a car, joyriding it, crashed it. And at that time, that's when we made a decision to grab all his little brothers, a few of my little cousins, and all of their friends, and bring them with us. Mm-hmm. And so in the earlier days, if you would have seen Illegal Tag Team, you would have always saw us with a group of little homies. And so that, as I began to branch off on my solo, I always kept that piece in me of lifting as we climb. Got a responsibility to give it back. As I started growing and understanding what we were really dealing with, because at that in the earlier stages, we just knew that it was chaos. We just knew it wasn't cool. But as I started studying, learning, studying trauma, studying mental health, studying AOD, right, alcohol and drugs and addiction, and I started realizing that it was deeper, right, and it was reasons and there's a science to what's going on.
Huh.
And a lot of it lies in our psychology. And so that's kind of the double world that I bring to the stage, the healing component.
Okay. I know you and Trouble broke up, but y'all, you know, you took a direction different than his, but you both are still brothers and stuff, as has been told. But what really caught my attention is you still kept going on, you know, you still kept progressing, kept performing. And even, you know, I've seen some of your shows, Mike's and Moody's, I've seen a lot of your shows and stuff. One thing that always caught my attention was you also were a host on a lot of your shows. I mean, even the Shea Lounge, the Mahogany, I mean, the Real Talk on Fridays and stuff. You've always been, you've not only been a performer, but you've also been the host that everybody wants to see or vibe with. Even at some of the Love Unlimited shows with Terry Moore and stuff. So tell me about that. Let me start off with this. Real Talk Friday. What's up with that?
Real Talk Friday will be coming back. Playing everything by ear because we still don't know what's going on with the pandemic. However, I'm not one to wait too long on anybody else. After a while, there's something in me, there's a spirit in me that will start to be like, yo, no permission, no apology. Right. We shoot. They can hate me for it later, or they can appreciate me later. Or they can jump aboard and help build it. And so with that, Real Talk Friday. So we ran Real Talk Friday. That was like what? For like 9 months. And it was a partnership at that time with another promoter. Shout out to JD. And we're still tight. The lounge that we was actually doing Real Talk Friday through Chase Lounge, actually, they lost their entertainment license. So they're their reason for even pulling in a poet was to kind of shift the energy. To shift the energy on the space because it was known for the turn-up spot, although it was just the lounge. Because on Tuesdays and Saturday nights, Friday and Saturday nights, it was turn-up.
Okay.
And so they were trying to add a different dynamic. But they actually, after a shooting, they lost their entertainment license. And so I put it on pause until we found another venue. And then quarantine happened as well, which caused for us to have to wait a little bit longer. But I'm not one to really complain about anything that's out of our hands that take place. I've had to learn, and I guess it was a lot of the bullet as well, and going through those growing pains that taught me that no matter what, find a way to find a way.
Hmm.
Find a way, and it's the same thing that to this day I try to give to my youngsters, that resiliency in us. Go and tap into and activate that resiliency in you. It's not about constantly getting up immediately. From my boxing background,
right.
You get cracked with a good one and you jump straight up immediately, what's gonna happen?
I get cracked again.
First of all, your brain and your body ain't really tapped in with each other. So just because you got the strength to get up, and this is a lot of what I studied through the mental health advocacy, right? I'm real self-care conscious. Because I know that it's not always about pretending to be good and looking good. It's not always about the ego of I'm tough, or we're going to keep rolling. Sometimes it's actually about taking time to process.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Okay, so what could we do better? Right? Where did we run into a barrier? What could we strengthen? What could we enhance? If we're going to keep on going. And I think every single time in my journey, as Queen the Poet, I've always taken my seasons, anytime something shut down, right? Whether it's partnerships, right? Whether it was illegal tag team. And don't get it twisted. I went through my, like I said, being more transparent. Like I went through my depression behind that. I took my time to grieve that. Now, it wasn't bad blood, but it was the fact that we were growing differently. And so that was the time period that it was time for me to stand on my own. I made a decision in the hospital that this was what I was going to do.
Mm.
So
it's progressed you so far. So you do Mahogany Poetry Center. You're the host for the fourth week host.
Last Wednesday.
Yes. So did you take over Luke Taylor's spot, or was it more you took over Russell's spot?
I like how you put that, because with your words, but you know how to pull it down.
Yeah, I just think about that. Like, oh, damn,
real punk,
huh? Real. They needed somebody. They needed somebody. You came in, and you basically were a viable choice. That's what I'm saying.
So look, I'm gonna put it like this. Luke Taylor, that's my little brother. That's my mentee.
Right.
He came in the game under Mind in Trouble, and more so under my wing through Sacramento Area UC, which we had a big hand in getting those wheels rolling.
Okay.
In the very 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 beginning. I'm talking about 2009 before they were even on record. Luke Taylor then, you know, he was also, Luke Taylor was booming real quick. His name, his brand, what he was doing was booming. He was given a position of hosting. He rocked. Every one of his nights was on fire.
Right.
He, Lil Bro actually reached out to me. Like, we spend a lot of time. We went to eat. He kind of shared with me where he was at in his journey. I understood it wholeheartedly because I've been there. And he was still on that finding himself and needing to journey and finding his manhood, finding his identity. So at that same time, I believe I was the first one that he let know that he was actually going to go ahead and give that position up.
Oh, okay.
And then at the same time, you know, I just held space. I had no opinions at all other than, like, I want you to be good, little bro. Then right after that, shortly after that, Kyrie asked me again to if I wanted to host. And this was February 2018.
Yeah.
So that folks know. So Kyrie had already asked me if I wanted to. And this was before they even had the multiple hosts.
Yeah.
Alternating nights. In 2014, before I left to go to the East Coast.
Oh, so you did leave to the East Coast. I didn't know that.
You are rocking live with Coom the Poet, fresh out of California, and you are witnessing a warrior's faith journey. Right now, currently, we are standing in the heart of Southeast Washington, D.C., gearing up, prepping, and preparing. Next stop, Rochester, New York, which is a dream for me.
Yeah. So I left. I kind of put myself on tour, and I kind of just, like, journeyed. My whole mission was, like, yo, I'm going to find as many open mics across the map that I can, and I'm going to build my brand. I'm going to build connections. I'm going to build relationships, and I'm going to add some more tricks to the trade. So, but before I left, you know, I actually ran into Kyrie, like, one evening, like at the Underground Bookstore, and he was like, yo, how you feel about hosting? To be all the way honest, and that's why the earlier conversation about leadership, we had that earlier conversation, because I was not, and at that time I was 24, I was not 23, 24, I was not ready. At least I didn't feel like I was ready to take up that mantle. Hmm. And so every time somebody came and was like, yo, bro, how you feeling about, man, like, look, you got so much influence, people love you, crowd love you, everybody, they listen to you. You want to do this? You want to do this? And so a lot of times when people would try to place things in my lap or at my table, I would find a way to kind of curb it.
Okay.
You know what I mean? And it was only after, you know, after journeying, going on my own journey, leaving home for 8-9 months, really, like, honing my gift, like, stepping out on my own and being okay to stand on my own too, right? Strengthening myself as an artist and as a man, was I able to come back and then be comfortable with taking up that position, right? As now in another position as leader, right? As somebody who's going to actually be consistent enough, mm-hmm, to hold down venues.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's where that was. So in Mahogany, that was once again, because Mahogany for 20, going on 21 years, has been in our city and our community. Shout out to Mahogany Urban Poetry Series. Shout out to Queen Shivers. Shout out to the Jamaica House. Shout out to, yeah, it's been many other restaurants even before Queen Sheba, but it has always been that building.
Right.
And so I knew that that was more of a Sacramento legacy thing.
Right.
And it needed to be handled with care. So I stood in that position. Still standing into it until further notice.
That concludes part one of our two-part interview. For more information, please go to linktr.ee/iambiczine. IAMBICZINE. Thank you.